We're going to head down to the Ballerine and have a chat with Will Darham. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, Simon.
Mate, we thought we'd check in with how vintage 24 has been for you guys. We sort of chatted in the lead up, but now that you've got most things through and you've got just a couple of ferments going, I'm sure sort of stragglers. But how's it been overall?
Look, after 4 years of fairly light vintages, it's been fantastic. It wasn't a massive yield or anything. It was just what we would consider normal, but we just haven't had that for a while. So getting back to normal was a terrific thing. It was a relief as much as it was exciting. The quality level I'm very excited about as well. Chardonnay was one of the first things to come off, and it was just stunning. And I think, so really excited for 2024 Chardonnay, which will be a while before we release that. But and it's got a bit of a journey to go on with Maloaf fermentation next, and then some barrel aging. But the other one was Pinot Noir, was really solid right across all the different blocks that we've got and the different clones, and particularly our original plantings, which are now, 22 years old. That's probably the best fruit I've seen from that block, and some of the best Pinot I've ever seen. So I'm really excited for that as well.
Gee, that's good, isn't it? Obviously, you chose the right varietal for the area. Do you know what that is? You would know what that is? What clone you use for the original stuff?
That's MV6, that particular one. We've got 114 and 115 MV6 Able clone, and more recently we've planted 667 and 777. So for your listeners that are interested in their Pinot clones, we've covered quite a few of them there. They're not all here, but most of what we do is Pinot Noir. And that probably gets lost a little bit when you do come down to the cellar door, because there are quite a lot of wines to try. But in terms of the volume of what we produce, it's about Pinot Noir.
Yep. Mm. Okay. And as you say, that I reckon it's one of the only varietals. I mean, Chardonnay maybe, but it's one of the only ones that normal people actually know some of these numbers and some of these names for the clones of the plant.
It's quite fascinating. Because you can talk clones in Shiraz and as you said, Chardonnay, it gets a little bit, particularly with Margaret River and the Mendoza clone.
Yes.
People talk about that, but it barely even rates a mention outside of that. And yet with Pinot, the second question you'll be asked when someone's trying the wine is, what clones do you have? And it's fascinating how that's become such a thing. But Pinot is the most challenging grape from a viticultural point of view and a winemaking point of view. It's the first one in a year where things go a bit get a bit hard. It's the first one to complain. I guess it throws out challenges all the way through, and maybe that's why it is so important to have the right clones. And where that leads you to, I guess, and not only that, we use them to build the wines now. So you've got, I guess, you're using the clones as a bit of a way of building a particular style of wine that you're chasing. So
just add other layers of what each thing brings, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. And I love all that. It's good fun. It's not exactly scientific. It's trial and error, but it's good fun. And the way clones perform in different areas is just so different. Mm. And we're really pleased with Able, for instance, as a more recent planting that we've done. It's just shown to have some lovely characters that we're certainly chasing.
Yeah.
It's a great story too. Well, predominantly planted in New Zealand.
Okay. Is there someone able?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, he was believed to be, or he is said to be a New Zealand customs officer who confiscated from a rugby player in the 70s.
Oh, really? What, he had it in his boot or something, is that what they...
So it's meant to be that, you know, both France and New Zealand are rugby nations, so I guess it's not hard to believe that he would have been given perhaps a little bit more access to a vineyard in Burgundy than maybe you and I would.
Yes.
And the story is that he managed to smuggle some cuttings from Domaine Romani Conti, these boots, back to New Zealand. But the customs officer confiscated them, but understood their importance, and then planted them. I believe it was his winemaker friend was working at Arangi, and they made a wine out of them, and then the rest is history. So that's the story. Anyway, it's a nice one. We've had it for about 6 years now, and we're producing for 6 years, and we're really impressed with it as a client. I still like have some other things in there as well. So yeah, you'll find that say a 777 clone will give you a lot of Turkish delight. Abel's fabulous for intensity and colour and mid palate, which is obviously what we're all chasing with Pinot Noir. It's got a lot of what we look for. And look, MB6 has been a fabulous performer for most regions. Pinot growing regions in Australia have sort of looked to that as a backbone clone. So, yeah.
Yeah, yep. And it's sort of the workhorse in a way, and then you add the bits.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And there's a lot of interest in the Dijon clones, and then the other clones from the varying parts of France. It seem to always, you know, one will be sort of fashionable, I guess, if there's, you know, I can use that term, because, you know, you see people posting about what they're planting, and it seems to be a similar theme permeating through what people are interested in. But it's an interesting aspect to Pinot lovers and their with wine, and I guess, you know, that's driven by the success of Burgundy and what they're doing and continue to do.
You do quite a lot of you do a few other varietals, though, don't you?
We do, yeah. So we've always sort of bred it far further afield, I guess, not just from our own vineyard as well. Just because I was fascinated in wine in general and loved to sort of just experiment with small batches of fruit from other areas, just also keeps us aware of what's happening out at in the wider wine market. So our obsession here is Pinot Noir, but I probably shouldn't even tell you this, but I love Cabernet because no one loves Cabernet at the moment, but I love Cabernet, and so I've sort of had always an interest in Cabernet. The first wine I ever made was a Cabernet, and back in 2002.
Yeah.
So I've found this little site up near Harcourt that I think produces some fabulous Cabernet. It doesn't have that sort of
hang on, Will, you just broke up at the Cabernet from up near Harcourt. So
near Harcourt, it hasn't got that sort of green pepper. It's a really lovely, well balanced Cabernet that we get out of that region. And look, we don't make a lot of it. It's my folly, I'm really interested in it as a variety. I think, you know, some of the greatest wines in the world, Bordeaux, Merlots, and Cabernets, it's just something we do. And the other ones we're doing, my first ever customer were an Italian family, and they had a restaurant in South Yarra, and so they asked me to make them an Italian red. So we started making a Sangiovese out of Heathcote, and we've continued to do that. So they've long sold that restaurant, but we still love making the Sangiovese. So, and it's got a following. So as I say, we don't
it's
make
great, wine. Your Sang. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really a smart wine, and we work closely with the grower, and they're so professional, and you learn from them as well. So, I mean, I think just staying in your own little world can be a bit isolating, and I suppose we've all had a taste of that over the last few years.
Yes, yeah, we don't need any more of that.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, getting out and seeing what other people are doing, and the Sangiovese we get comes from Chalmers Vineyard, and they're a massive big family of growers.
And importers, that's where a lot of most of the Italian varietals come through them, don't they?
That's right, yeah. So their knowledge and the way they've gone about planting the vineyards up there is a lesson for anyone that is looking to plant a vineyard. It's not your beautiful, picturesque, you know, wedding venue. It is a way of producing a grape at a quality level that the winery requires, and it's done, you know, exceptionally well. We've really enjoyed working with that fruit, and it makes. I mean, look, most of what we put in the bottle comes from, you know, the performance of the vine and the grape in the vineyard. So, you know, I think it's people often ask you, is it the grape or is it the winemaker? And I think it's 80-85% the grape that arrives at the winery, and then the winemaker can only muck it up from there, really.
Well,
so,
do you know what? Yeah. The last two guests we've had on said exactly the same thing as you. So,
right.
to the point where Fergus McGee from up in the Canberra district, he's at Mount Majura. He said, like, literally word for word what you just said then, really, about, yeah, it's up to you guys to stuff it up once it comes in.
Yeah, or not.
Yeah,
we would hope.
Preferably not. Yes.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there are so many things that can go right and wrong from that moment forward that will influence the wine. But ultimately, if your fruit isn't good when it arrives, you really can't do much beyond making an acceptable wine. So we're glad that doesn't occur very often at all, which is great. Modern, you know, viticultural standards that are practiced through the Bellarine are pretty good, and certainly, as I say, through our connections with playing with these other varieties that we get from further afield, we're seeing and learning as well about other techniques and so on. And there's some exciting things happening in that space too, moving forward. So I think, you know, we're going to see robots arriving over the next 10 years into vineyards in a big way.
Really?
And
where would that start? Really, like what sort of tasks would they do? What would be the first ones you'd imagine?
I think the weeding seems number one on everyone's priority, you know, getting away from chemicals.
Yep.
And we've just invested in mechanical means, so you know, using a tractor to do it. But the advantages of robots are obviously there's no need for a driver, but also that they can just constantly be out there beavering away, a little bit like a robot lawnmower that you might have seen in your neighbour's yard. Where I was going for a ride locally, and there was this immaculate lawn out the front of this house. It wasn't a particularly big lawn. And there was his little robot mower mowing his lawn.
Yeah.
And they're starting to get to target agriculture. So they're starting to make bigger and bigger versions of those. And so, yeah, so that...
Yeah, you can imagine it wouldn't be that hard to learn how to just go up a row and then when to turn. I mean, tractors do it on exactly, broadacre yeah. farming. It's all GPS-based. Yeah,
the right? combination of GPS is getting better and better. And then not only that is you've got the infrastructure of the posts.
Yeah.
So if you needed some sort of reference point for that, a vineyard actually is easier than broadacre farming in some senses. But, yeah, there's still a way away, but it is coming. And you see it in broadacre farming with crops. Weed control is probably the number one, and they're using non-chemical means. So generally lasers is one of the ones I've seen.
Really? Like sort of burn it in a way?
Yeah. Zap it. Yeah, and then the other one is they turn the topsoil, which is good in a couple of times a year. You don't want to be tilling your soil excessively. So there's a lot to learn in that space, and there's a lot of things that are yet to sort of commercialise. But it's an exciting part of what's happening in the industry because it will create a scenario where we get some of the economies of scale for a small operator like we are that some of the bigger wineries will enjoy. So, because it is, they have equipment that we would dream of owning. So it sort of brings that down to the smaller operator who's got maybe a smaller vineyard and so on. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And there's a lot of players, particularly from Europe, in that space.
Well, it makes me a little concerned about your program that you've always talked about, and I don't know whether you've had it yet or whether it just is still a thought, to have your baby doll sheep in the vineyard.
it was something we were working on, and, yeah, we have probably put that to one side at the moment. I still believe that that's a really good way to manage your weeds and you have them running through there in vintage. But I kind of didn't want a huge fence running all along the top of my vineyard as you drive
to
in.
Contain them.
Quite a nice beach
within,
there. And,
yeah, I see.
And then we did have a problem of right next to our original plantings, we had some young vines and... Then yeah, so there were some issues there, but there are plenty of wineries where they are doing that and with great success. We do still have sheep here, but they live out the back in a broad acre. But
we chatted with a winemaker. I'm not sure if you've ever met Lauren Langfield, and she's the head winemaker at Orbis Wines over in McLaren Vale, and so they're very much close the loop, and that's their sort of philosophy. And as much as they can to increase the health of the vineyard. But yeah, so they've got them, and so I told her that I'd mention it to you that. So apparently, you've got to go and see a lady called Dee Nolan over in Barossa, and she's keeping the bloodlines clean for the baby doll sheep.
Baby dolls. Mm. Oh, excellent.
So yeah. But no, they're loving it. And so what they've done with they're planting, they're taking some vines out and also grafting over some new varietals. And they're raising the cordon so that they can actually have the sheep in there all the time.
Wow, that's really committed.
Mm.
Well, that's probably what the sort of things we would need to do. I guess because we planted another 5 acres of young vines as well. In the last, we did some last year and some the year before. It just causes problems if you've got, because they're so much more vulnerable being eaten. And sheep just eat everything. So,
which is great if it's in directed to where you want it to be, right?
Yeah, if your vineyard's set up and they don't, they're very short, so they tend not to look up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're terrific. It's not. I wouldn't rule out ever doing it. It's just we haven't done it, so I can't. Yeah. I can't say we're doing it. But the concept of it was great in that you're getting that fertilizer as well back to your vines, which the vines would love, and you're reducing your weed and your seed. So they eat the weeds before they drop a seed, so then it sort of stops that cycle.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it?
Which is really good.
Well, yeah, because the concept came from you to me, as in the first person ever, whoever I heard it from was you. So there you go. Right. I'm going to keep you on the baby doll program.
I never quite got there, unfortunately.
Well, maybe you just kept the baby dolls in the established part and then you put the robots in the new part.
Yeah, well, that's what we could do, yes. But as I say, I'd have to do a lot of fencing and I kind of like it all open. And,
yeah.
We don't encourage people to wander in there, but they can at the moment. But, a fence sort of running along that particular part of our property would be pretty unattractive. But there is some fabulous... things happening in that space too, with the temporary fencing and so on. So I won't rule it out.
Okay.
You could do something. Yeah.
So it's a watch this space. Let's go with that. So speaking of your vineyard and aesthetically and all that sort of thing, for more than just yourselves looking at it, we can come down and check out the restaurant and the Cellar d'Or.
Absolutely.
It's a great... it's a great space, and the food, they're doing a great job with the food, mate. In the last month, is it? But a little while ago. But, it was fantastic. So,
Chris and his team have done a terrific job.
And the service is this really chill, professional chill sort of style, you know? It's like they've got an eye on the fact that your glass is getting down.
Chris has been in the industry for about 30 years. I think he's worked in at the Stoke House in Melbourne, and he's very much about that sort of chilled. Enjoy yourself. We're here if you need us, but we're not sort of standing over you either.
Yeah.
And we want people to engage us. That space is so important from a point of view of people that are wanting to learn about the wines. We've built up a really good team now that have good training on what we do and what we're about. So even if I'm not up there, there's Ross and Chris particularly, and a couple of the other guys that work for us there part-time that really know what we're doing. They've helped me out down in the winery, so they've had direct contact with the winemaking process and the vineyard, so it's good to sort of have that back again, because we kind of lost it for a couple of years when there was a bit of staff turnover, and I think everyone sort of experienced a bit of that in varying ways in most industries, but we weren't immune from that either. So it's great to actually have that back where we can sort of showcase good local cuisine with our wines and sort of communicate it to the public as well. They can interact sort of as little or as much as they want to with us as well. We're not forcing it down their throat.
Yeah, yeah, right. Mm. And so obviously make a booking if you want to go. Now, this is, I suppose, not wanting to put you on the spot, but the Anzac Day weekend's coming next week. The Friday is potentially a day that people will not go to work and they'll, work from home. They may as well work from a winery.
That's what we want them to do. Actually, I'm a big... I was really upset when they announced the first ever Friday grand final holiday. Oh, God, another holiday. It's the best thing for us.
Is it?
Everyone comes down, and so I have to eat my words.
Oh, well, hopefully this year the timing's worked out in your favour as well.
Well, that's right. The actual holiday's on the Thursday.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple of big football games, and then hopefully everyone comes down to our part of our neck of the woods and, try some wine.
Now, nice Anzac Day, are you allowed to be open and are you open? I don't know what the rules are there.
Now you're testing me up. Yeah. There is a time period that we have to stay closed. I think we can open later. I haven't actually...
Like for the afternoon, maybe. That sort of feels about right.
I think we're allowed to open after 12, but I'll have to double check that with the guys up up at the restaurants to what exactly is happening on Anzac Day. But,
and so what about Celador? Are you going to be open, or if anyone was down your way?
We will be open that weekend for sure. We don't have any special menu on or anything like that, but the current menu is fantastic. It's something for everybody. So the kids are catered for as well. As you know, we have the connection through to the Big Four next door.
Yeah.
So we do get a lot of kids, and hopefully, bring a footy with you, and they can just have a kick around.
Yeah, there's plenty of room, isn't there, for the footy?
Yeah, and that's what we find tends to happen when you need a bit of a break. They leave you alone. You can do a wine tasting and enjoy yourself.
And sort of still keep an eye out the window on them in a way.
Yeah. We don't want yeah, I don't want any issues. But
no.
Yeah.
What I mean is, it's possible to see where they are. You know.
It's right next to where you're sitting. Mm. So that's been one thing that's worked really well up there. And we just want to have people that are enjoying themselves and having a good time. And getting a great experience from what we're doing here, and then. Yeah, even going further afield around the region and seeing what the region has to offer, there's a lot going on. So there's Q Train, which is a restaurant on the train that goes from Queenscliff to Drysdale.
Right. That's cool.
And they're fabulous supporters of all the local wineries. And there's lots of other things down here as well. But, hopefully
we'll
see you that weekend.
Yeah, well... Definitely come and check out you guys at Banks Road, and then there's other wineries down over the other side towards Port Arlington sort of way, isn't there? So
there are quite a few, and they're sort of all huddled in together there. So it's a really good opportunity to see a few at once when you go over there. Yeah, but we're not far from Oakdean. McGlashan's around the corner,
yeah.
So they're all worth. A visit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really in good shape, I reckon, the Ballerine, and it's so easy to get to. And I'm pleased to hear that you've got some volume back to your harvest, and that you're happy with how it's all looking. The fruit that came in, so that's good for us wine drinkers.
Yeah, I look forward to showing you the product.
Yes,
I think you'll be really impressed.
I'm sure. I've been impressed with most things you've had out so far. So just give us a couple of things that people should keep an eye out if they want to come down and taste a few things this weekend.
Definitely come down, try the Sangiovese is one that we were talking about. I think that's well worth a try. We've got... a little bit. We're running low on our Grigio, so for the Grigio lovers, it's probably a great opportunity to come and grab some of that. The 23 Chardonnay is back, so that's been very popular. Obviously, Chardonnay's been very popular at the moment. So, and the 23 is a great example of what we do. So, I'd love to see what people think.
Mm. Well, mate. So people can find – so go to the website, banksroad.com.au. You can book for the restaurant and then Celador. Are you booking Celador or can you turn
Yeah, they can. They can book that on the website as well. You just select that they want to do a tasting. And then they can always stay – they can always do a lunch booking and do a tasting. So it's quite flexible in that respect.
Excellent. Well – I can think of many worse things to do, Will, than coming and seeing you guys when we're down, Ballerine. So,
well, thanks, Simon.
All right, mate. Well, we'll. My team's playing this Anzac Day, and yours is not playing until June for the long weekend. But, mate, your demons are going all right?
Yeah, next Wednesday night, mate. It's us versus the Tigers.
There you go. That'll be a massive game.
Yeah, it will be a very important game, I think, for for probably both sides. I think the Tigers have been a bit stiff in a few of their games, and they I think they had a bad loss this week. So yeah, so they'll be out to
Anzac Eve.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Demons are going okay. They've just, hopefully they can do another 21.
Yes. Well, hopefully they can come second to Collingwood this year.
Yeah, we'll never agree on that.
No, I'm sure we won't. I'm sure we won't.
ABC. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Mate, great to chat again, Will. Thank you. Would we just, more broadly on the Bellarine, would most people have experienced sort of similar sort of vintage to you from a quality and quantity point of view, do you think?
It's a little bit varied, interestingly enough. It comes back to the microclimate, I guess, but okay. Most that I've spoken to have had a good season. I think... a handful have been a little bit like us, where we've been really pleased with what we've got. But, yeah, it is a little mixed. A couple have told me they're well down, which surprised me, but that's the nature of growing grapes. It's not always uniform. So, there's only, 15-minute drive from one side of the Bellarine to the other, but it can be quite dramatic difference in climate from, we might get 30 mil and someone gets three or the other way around.
Yeah.
So you can get that amazing amount of variation just in such a short area.
Yeah, that is.
But, we put a lot of work in. I don't know how much credit we can take. I think Mother Nature does most of the work, but, they were good, healthy bunches and good bunch weights, which just makes a great difference to yields. They weren't huge yields. It was very even, right, through all the varieties. It was sort of bang on what we would consider sort of long-term average. So we've been sort of 35% below that on average over the last 3-4 years. So to get that has just been fabulous, and over the coming 12 months we'll start releasing some of those wines, and it'll be great to have that stock.
Yeah, because you would have run out of a few things, no doubt.
Well, we've all but run out of Riesling at the moment. We're about to run out of Grigio, as I mentioned, and there's a lot of pressure on Chardonnay as well. So, and that you go from, I think I made like 100 and we normally make sort of 400 cases of Shardy, and I think last year I only made about 150. It just really puts a big hole in that space. But, you've still got to sell that wine, and then we won't release the next one probably till about March next year. It'll all work out.
Bridge the gap. I will let you go, but I've had a question text in from Alan. Alan asks, and I'm going to defer this to you just in case you know, because I actually haven't tried the wine that he's talking about, but he's talking about the Malbec varietal, and he said, have you tried it from the Bridge Winery, which is up behind Emily's Paddock in Heathcote?
No, I haven't. I've worked a little bit with Malbec, and it's a beautiful variety to work with. It's got amazing colour.
Mm. It's inky, isn't it? Sort of.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we make a Malbec Merlot blend that was sort of something we fell into. And it's a great story. I was with a fellow in a wine bar who runs a wine bar locally, and I said, you can't sell these Merlots and Malbecs and Cabernets, and he just said, well, call them anything other than that. Just come up with a name for it. Obviously we still required to put the varieties on the label, but he just said, it's a bit like some of the top wines in the world have just got a name. They don't mention what varieties they are.
Yeah.
So I think the general public have a love for these varieties without realising it. they're just...
So do you still make a Malbec Merlot?
I haven't, no. We used to own the vineyard down towards Port Arlington. They'd actually tried to graft some of it away, but they there was this little bit left. And I think it's all gone now, but I think it's been grafted over to Chardonnay now or something. But so we the last one we made was 2019, so it's I think we're just on the last of the 18 at the moment, and we'll release the 19. But
That's another thing to look at. When people come down, right?
I don't know how it would compare to the one in Heathcote. And ours is a blend, but not a straight variety. So that's a straight varietal, that one.
It sounds like it, yeah. And thanks, Ellen, for texting in.
I think, if I'd love your listeners to reach out and try some of these other varieties that are around, because there's some fabulous wines out there. There's a lot of new varieties that are emerging as well. We do a Fiano and a Vidicchio for a local grower, and I love working with those. But I think the old established varieties that are perhaps not as trendy anymore are still worth a look as well.
And a well-made wine is not going to disappoint, right? Even if it's not exactly the taste.
But yeah, absolutely. Small boutique grower that cares for their vines properly, they're passionate about what they're doing, and care in the winemaking process, and you can see some fabulous things. So these guys that have got the Fiano and Vidicchio, they do a Franc, and the Franc is sensational as well. That's another Bordeaux variety that you just don't see very often, so especially not on its own.
Not on its own, exactly. That's something for people to have a look at while they're still around. Well, I'll let you go. Thank you, mate, for having a chat, and thanks for sort of giving us an update on the Bellarine and what's in store. So, anyone who's down there, call into Banks Road and say good day to Will.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
And Chris and the team, and yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Come and see us.
Good one. All right, mate. Have fun.
Thank you.
Thanks, Will. See you. Bye-bye.